Okay. Welcome everyone to the opening session for LCA 2007. And today we have Leonard, who's going to be giving us a talk on the Pulse Audio Sound Server, which is like a super duper ESD. Sounds very, very interesting. So, over to Leonard.
Okay. Okay, then let's get started. You see content. You'll see them on top of the screen all the time, so no need to show them here. So, first of all, who am I? I'm a computer science student from Hamburg, Germany. I'm the core developer of Pulse Audio, and also of Avahi and a few other projects. If you're interested in the entire list, just go to that website. That's my email address, and on IRC, I'm known as Mescalero. So, and then let's get started with the introduction. So, first I would like to speak about the current state of Linux audio. So, how it's like, it's just a mess. There are just too many widely adopted but competing and incompatible sound systems around. too many low-level APIs, there's OSS, there's ALSA, there's eSound, there's ART, there's Phonon, there's Jack, and there are lots of others which I didn't list here. They're generally incompatible. The OSS API is the only one that is somewhat supported across more than a single operating system. They are not just incompatible, so that you can't run one software on top of another API, but they're also in some way exclusive. So you can run ALSA and ALSA DMIX, but you can't run OSS at the same time, and so on and so on. The problem with OSS API, obviously, is that OSS emulation is difficult. So while many operating systems support it, it's very difficult to support it in non-hardware, in non-kernel drivers. So the current state is like this. Sound systems fight a constant battle which one gets access to the sound device. If eSound wins, only eSound can't play audio. If ARTS wins, only ARTS clients can play our audio. If Jack wins, only Jack clients can play audio. If ALSA DMIX wins, OSS applications cannot play audio. If eSound, ARTS, or ALSA wins, you cannot have good, dependable, exactly measured latencies. So if eSound wins, you cannot have surround sound. If OSS wins, you can usually play only a single audio stream at the same time. If Jack wins, you can only have floating point samples, and playback needs to be started manually in Jack, so it's much more different than all other sound systems. So abstraction APIs exist, but none is widely accepted. So there's Pod Audio, if someone has heard of that. There's LibAO, there's OpenAL, there's SDL, there's CSL. None of them has more than a few users. And none of them is widely adopted. Port audio sucks in some way. LibAO has a stupid license. OpenAL is very complicated, and so on and so on. None is widely accepted. None is a solution for everything. So, and then there's, of course, Phonon, which also abstracts audio APIs in a way. So, however, the question is about Phonon. I believe that everyone already heard of Phonon, which is by the KDE project, which abstracts not just audio playback, but the entire multimedia stack, like GStream and everything. So we have those APIs, but the question is excessive abstraction a good idea? I mean, Phonon abstracts the media layer, like media pipelines and stuff, and LibAO abstracts the basic hardware, and so you can build stacks of abstraction layer over abstraction layer over abstraction layer on abstraction layer. So something like that to run Amarok on Phonon and GStream on ALSA and Pulse Audio on ALSA is currently possible, and some people think that that is a good idea to do. Then this was all about the bad things we currently have with those competing and incompatible audio APIs. So let's look at what else the current Linux desktops are missing. We currently don't have a compass for sound. I guess everyone knows compass in a way, that bling thing which does 3D effects on your desktop. But we currently lack that for sound. We don't have a sound system which allows to apply different volumes to every audio stream which is currently being played. We don't have a sound system which can automatically remember the volume for each application. We like a sound system which can do stuff like automatically interrupting the background music playback if a voice of IP call comes in. We don't have a system which can follow what the window manager does and increase the volume of the application that's currently in foreground and decrease the volume of the window that is currently in background. We don't have a system which can automatically remember the volume of output devices and actually can also remember the output device itself for an application. We don't have a sound system which can do hot switching of playback streams between devices. Just think of you plug in your USB speakers and you want that the currently played back audio is automatically, without interruption, without the, having the application even notice it, move to that new plugged in audio device. So there are a lot of stuff you could do which would add policy and nice features for the real desktop link and audio. So what else can we say about the current state of Linux audio? We have the professional audio world and we have the desktop audio world, and they're completely separate. Most of the developers very seldomly talk to each other, and that is a real pity. They have mostly different infrastructure. The professional audio people use Jack and stuff like that, and the non-professional people use ESD and stuff like that. So the only common infrastructure both worlds currently share seems to be ALSA. However, they use ALSA in a different configuration. So right now, they are effectively entirely different worlds. If you run your professional audio application, you have to configure your machine completely different than if you want to run a desktop application, audio application. So on the other hand, these were all the bad things one can say about the state of Linux audio. However, there are also a few good things which only free desktops currently can provide. This is, of course, network transparent sound, first in clients. Windows doesn't have that, macOS doesn't have that. Only very few implementations of something like this exist. However, on Linux, it's totally standard and used in very large installations. So we have a wide range of high-level audio applications. We have ADA, we have Jack, we have whatever, and with stuff like Jack, we can integrate that very good. We have a low latency kernel. Just look at what Windows does. I mean, they don't have such a good low latency kernel. On Linux, we can theoretically at least reach very low latency real-time processing of audio. Windows can't do that. MacOS can do it in a way. But it's definitely a good thing we can do in that on Linux. We have some well-defined acceptors API, like Jack. Every professional Linux audio application uses Jack, and Latspur as well. So there are a few good things we currently have on Linux. So what can we do about the situation that audio in Linux sucks so much? First, we can see that it's not a law of nature that cannot be overturned. Just look at what Apple does with macOS. On macOS, they managed to implement an audio system which is called Core Audio, which marries both the professional and the desktop world of audio, and which in some way makes everyone happy. So macOS can do it, as can Microsoft in a way. The new Windows Vista ships a new user space sound system, which does all that Compass for Sound stuff. If you have seen the screenshots here, they have this that kind of mixer where you can change the volume of every application separately. So we must admit that right now, Apple and Microsoft are better than we are. So what can we do to actually get this all fixed, to reach the level that Microsoft and Apple have reached, and to make the best of it? So first of all, we have to acknowledge that some APIs are not going to go away. We have to find a way that we can run all the current software we already have on on the future stuff. So we don't. We must make sure to not break compatibility with what we currently have. One thing of that is we have to acknowledge that OSS in this case means Open Sound System, by the way, not open source software. We have to acknowledge that API is not going to go away. We have to add compatibility for that awful API. In some way, we need to agree on an API that people should standardize on. Right now, if someone starts to write an audio application for Linux, he has so many different options, and he doesn't have an option which can fulfill all the needs a programmer usually has. If cross-platform stuff is important to him, he has to choose a different API than if he just wants to do a very simple application, and so on and so on. So a good thing would be to have a single API where everyone would program against, and the Apple people managed to do that, and Windows did that as well. So why can't we? Perhaps we should stop abstracting abstracted abstraction layers. Right now, every single amp layer and scene and whatever has a different abstraction of audio devices. They all bring their own abstraction of audio devices, their own driver system. So right now you can run an amp layer on ALSA, on OSS, on whatever. And sometimes they even allow to abstract even further down so that you can load the LibAO driver into amp layer and LibAO then loads its own driver and so on and so on. So, what are the missing pieces right now? We need to find a way to marry all the currently conflicting APIs together, and we need to introduce a layer of compatibility for the current APIs. We need, of course, to come up with something like a compass for sound so that we can catch up with Microsoft and Apple. We need to retain the unique features we already have. Of course, we shouldn't lose anything we already have better than Apple and Microsoft have. And we need, of course, play a little catch-up with Apple and Microsoft in more areas. So that's about the current state of Linux audio. Now I'm going to start with what Pulse Audio is about. So what is Pulse Audio? It's many things. It's a project formerly known as Polyp Audio. Many of you probably noticed the name change we recently had. It's a modular sound server. It's a drop-in replacement for eSound, eSound done right. It's an application server for sound. It's a compass for sound. It's a window manager for sound. It's somewhat like a counterpart for the new Windows Vista user space sound system. It is a compatible sound system which allows running 90% of all Linux audio software simultaneously without conflicting. And it is a software developed by Pierre Osman and yours truly. There's a lot of different things, and some things are probably not so easy to understand what I mean by that. So, yeah, and also LGPL license, but yeah. So, we had this really long list of stuff which not everyone might understand. So let's ask a question again. What is Pulse Audio really? The definition of a sound server is something like this. It's basically a proxy for a sound device that receives audio data from your application, does simpler, more advanced operations on it, and passes it to the device. And secondly, it's also a proxy that receives audio from your sound device, does simple and more advanced operations on it, and pass it on to your application. So that's first thing is about playback, second thing is about capturing. So what are those simple or more advanced operations? Those could be mixing multiple streams together, probably what most people would expect from a sound server. Adjust the sample rate or format. Do volume adjustments. Apply filters like echo cancellation. Redirect a copy to another audio device or an application, possibly over the network. Reroute the channels, so we could transform stereo audio to surround sound on the fly. And we have the term of a modular sound server. So what does that mean? Pulse Audio is currently shipping with 34 modules. Those 34 modules have different purposes. One of the purposes, of course, is driver support. We currently have modules for OSS, for ALSA, for Solaris Audio, for Win32 Audio. Then what else can one do with those modules? We support three different protocols, and all of these are implemented as modules. We have some toy modules like Lyric or multimedia keyboards. So then with that one can hook up the remote control directly to the Pulse Audio server, and the volume keys are interpreted directly in the sound system. Then we have some modules which handle X11 integration. This is mostly the bell, so that we can make sure that when one presses some bad keys and a bell sound is generated by the X11 system, that Pulse Audio hooks into it, and instead of using the internal speaker to make some annoying beep, we can play some more interesting sound. The other X11 module is for handling credentials for authentication. We have more modules. We have modules. One is there for doing some kind of jack integration, that you can run jack and Pulse Audio side by side and they can talk to each other. We have a module which connects to eSound, so that you could do stupid stuff like running Pulse Audio on top of eSound. We have a module which does ZeroConf. As I already said, I'm one of the developers of Avahi, so it's not really surprising that we added ZeroConf support. That means all the audio devices that are available in a sound server are registered on the network, and you can browse for them. And so a client application can just say, OK, I don't want to play audio on my local sound device. I want to play it on the remote sound device. And then you can just select from a list of available sound devices on the local network. We have a module which automatically restores volumes, devices from playback streams. So you start your application once, manipulate the volume control and move it to a certain audio device, and then you stop that application, and 2 days later you come back and start the application again. Pulse Audio has remembered and restores the volume, restores the output device audio goes to. And then we have a nice module which does the following. Sometimes you have your USB speakers plugged to your laptop, you play music on it, and then you just pull the plug, maybe by mistake or something, and you actually don't want the music to stop in that case. So there's a nice module which just every time a hot plug event happens, when a device vanishes, we move the stream to something else, if there is any. Then we have a module which does simple device auto detection, which just goes statically through the list of local audio devices and loads the respective driver modules. Those driver modules we had on the previous slide. And we have a more advanced auto detection stuff based on HAL, which also does hot plug, so that the appropriate driver module for Pulse Audio is loaded right in the moment you plug in your USB audio device. Then we have a module which can synchronize output on multiple sound devices. So you have two sound cards, and you can essentially synchronize them in a way that audio goes out through both of them at the same time, and it always stays synchronized. So usually if you have two sound cards, the quartz or the crystals deviate a little bit. So if you start them playback at the same time, after a while, one is ahead of the other. And that audio device, that module handles that little deviation and resamples one of the streams if necessary. So I think you now have a kind of a idea what Pulse Audio is. But what is Pulse Audio not? So it's not a competitor for Jack, for GStreamer, for Helix, for Xion, or Phonon. It's not a competitor for Jack. We are not trying to replace Jack. Jack is a well-accepted standard, and Pulse Audio is not implemented for professional audio stuff. We will have some integration for that, but we will not replace Jack. It's not a replacement for GStreamer. GStreamer does pipelining, it does decoding, it does everything. We don't do that. We have very simple pipelines where only two nodes are involved and not more. We are not a competitor to Helix, which is more or less the same as GStreamer. We are not a competitor to Xion. We are not a media player. We don't do video, anything. We are not a competitor to Phonon. We don't abstract things. We add our own stuff. So it's not just yet another audio API. We already have so many. We don't try to push people to use ours. I will come, hopefully, back to that later. People have made bad experience with eSound. If you look in public web forums, you often can read the tip, "Oh, my audio doesn't work, what can I do?" And someone else replies, "Just do a kill all ESD and everything works." So Pulse Audio is not about doing that again. We try to do a sound system that always works, or at least we try to. So what are the features of Pulse Audio? Pulse Audio supports 32 channels. It's just random features that came to my mind. We will, of course, have a longer list on, but these are very simple to describe. So we support a lot number of channels, more than ESD does. ESD only supports two. So we support a wide range of sample formats. We do real-time scheduling to allow low priority audio. We do network transparent sample caching, which is very useful in thin clients. Yeah. So what's the current status of Pulse Audio? Right now it does everything that eSound does, and it also does everything what ELSA DMIX does. So it's part of most major distributions. Debian ships it, Ubuntu makes it the default on the next release. From Zuse, I haven't heard anything. It's part of Fedora, and is going to be installed by default there as well. And all other distributions already ship it. In thin client environments, it's very well accepted, since it's so much better than eSound. They were, of course, the first ones to adopt it. On normal desktops, it's not that common yet, because there's not the striking reason. We try to add the striking reason for that, but right now we're not yet at the point. There's a viable, commercial support is available from Senio. Pulse Audio is being developed by me and by some other guy, and the other guy is from Norway, and is working for that company named Thanio, so if you want commercial support, you can get it there. It's portable. We currently, Pulse Audio runs on Linux, on FreeBSD, on Solaris, and on native Win32. It's quite good when it comes to latency behavior, and it's very good when it comes to estimating the latency. But of course, there's lots of room of improvement. I will come back later to that, the current work is what we do in Pulse Audio and what the future work will be. So many people ask, why is there a need for Pulse Audio if you already have ELSA DMIX? Actually, ELSA DMIX is something like a simple Pulse Audio, but it has serious limitations. The latency is pretty bad and pretty unflexible. It has a very unstable timing. I guess a G-stream of people can tell you stories about that. And it's not portable, of course. It doesn't run on Windows. It doesn't even run on other Unix systems, but Linux. So most people then ask, why not fix ELSA DMIX? And then I can only reply, Pulse Audio is kind of a fix for DMIX. And why that? ELSA DMIX is just a sound daemon. It's automatically started by libA sound, so it appears to be something which is not a sound daemon. But if you look closely, if you play a stream through ELSA DMIX, you will see that there is a process running, which is called DMIX, and which is the actual sound server. Pulse Audio maybe started exactly the same way. Pulse Audio has a plugin for libA sound, and you can start it on demand. And then it is a drop-in replacement, in a way, for DMIX. However, it is the latency behavior better, has a better timing, and is much more portable. And in addition, it has lots of other features. So while we say that we can run it on demand, we usually do not recommend it due to some reasons, because running it only on demand removes a lot of features which are only viable if it's a long-running process. One could say that Pulse Audio takes the functionality of the ELSA DMIX plugin and of the PlugHW plugin out of LibAuth and replaces it with something better. So, other people ask, why should they use Pulse Audio if there already is eSound? There's practically no reason left to use eSound. eSound, as I already said, is superseded in every way by Pulse Audio. So, at least on the desktop, Pulse Audio does everything what eSound does, but much better, of course. On embedded devices, not really the case, because Pulse Audio relies on a library called libsampleWrite, which only works on with floating point units. So on embedded devices, we really don't want that. That is not an error in Pulse Audio itself, but it's just a limitation of an underlying library. And then, of course, people ask, what's about Pulse Audio if you already have Jack? There is simply no versus. As I already said, we do not try to replace Jack. Jack has different objectives than we have. Jack is more about inter-client communication, inter-application communication for professional audio. We have a different perspective. Jack also has some limitations that make it a little bit unusable. A little bit unusable for desktop use. They rely on floating point numbers. You have to first start the audio device, the sound server manually. Not like starting in ProSet, but you have to click a button to actually start the playback. And so for normal desktop use, it's nothing someone would use. It also has a relatively high CPU usage. And it's incompatible with everything else. You have to program directly to Jack if you want to use it. And as I already said, we are thinking of integrating that in future with Pulse Audio in some way, so that Jack can be loaded as a module directly into the Pulse Audio server. That way we retain the good latency behavior of both Jack and Pulse Audio, but you don't have to switch between those. So that way we hope to reach a single unified sound solution where you can run Pulse professional audio applications and normal desktop applications without manually reconfiguring anything. So the last question is, of course, how does Pulse Audio compare to ARTS? Again, there is no versus. It's just simple. ARTS is officially dead, so we don't have to deal with that. So, yeah, I want to talk about the usage now, though we only have 7 minutes left or something. So we will skip about a little bit. It depends, it's not that interesting. So compatibility in Pulse Audio. As I said, Pulse Audio is intended to be kind of the compatible sound system, which you can run 90% of the currently available Linux software on. And how do we reach that? First of all, we have a plugin for ALSA, so that you can use any ALSA application on top of Pulse Audio. Secondly, we have some kind of OSS compatibility with LD Preload. Other systems like ESD and ARTS used to have something similar called ARTS DSP or ESD DSP. Then we have a native implementation of the eSound protocol, so you can run every eSound application on top of Pulse Audio. We have some kind of integration with Jack, so you can run Jack and Pulse Audio side by side, can run Jack and Pulse Audio application, of course, side by side. We have a plugin for lib.io, so every lib.io using application can use Pulse Audio directly. We have a plugin for GStreamer, so that every GStreamer application can directly contact Pulse Audio. We have a plugin for XMMS and for Audacious. Audacious is some kind of XMMS with GTK2 and whatever. We have a driver for Amplayer, for Zine, and for MPD. So in sum, about 90% of all Linux applications should run on it. 90% is a conservative guess. The remaining 10% are usually games and very high-end professional audio software. But that's the current state, and I hope that will eventually change. This is a screenshot of a few user interface tools we have in Pulse Audio. Pulse Audio is usually just a daemon sitting in the background. However, we have a few user interface applications so that you can introspect or configure or change whatever is in Pulse Audio. We will skip over that. This one is a bigger screenshot of what we just saw. This one is a volume control that's specific to Pulse Audio. What you see here is for every the stream that's currently playing that, you see backed. Is currently being played back. You see a mixer tracks appear here. Right now, there's only a single stream being played. You can right-click on such a stream, and then you can move it on the fly without interruption to a different audio device. That's a bug in events. Yeah, not my fault. Sucks. Those were some other screenshots from some of the other applications. Yeah. This screenshot apparently works. That's a Pulse Audio device chooser, which is an icon which sits here in the notification area, which you can use to quickly change audio devices. It will browse for all the audio devices that are viable on the network and announced via ZeroConf. So what we can see here is that there are three things on the network on a machine called Curacao. There's a thing called RTP, and an also output and another also output. So then I just can click on that and click on that, and then I have switched the audio to another machine. This screenshot apparently also works. That's a preferences tool, so Pulse Audio has lots of configuration options. This application tries to simplify that because the configuration options are usually you do that with a command line language, which is difficult to understand, difficult to use. So this application tries to select a few very useful options and present them in a nice user interface so that even people who don't bother with writing that command line language can use them. Yeah, and I guess in the interest that we should be able to answer questions, I will just skip about over the internals and just skip to the last. To the last slide. So yeah, if you're interested in seeing all the rest of the slides, just download them. I will publish them on the blog, on my blog, and they will be being published by LinuxConf.au. So any questions? By the way, the rest of the slides, there are a lot of more slides. I didn't expect to go through all of them, but nonetheless, they're very interesting. So have a look.
So my question is, we've talked about this already, but for the sake of the audience, when do you think you're going to be stable enough to feel comfortable with people actually using the API, and when are you going to start building API and API compatibility?
API compatibility is a difficult issue. We are currently being compatible with the API from Polyp Audio 0.6. So we currently have an API stability. However, we are not quite sure that the API we currently have is the best API there could be. And that's why we do not recommend people, or at least not to the general public, to adopt our API. However, at the FOMS conference, which happened just before LCA, we discussed that issue, and we decided to try to solve this with defining a common audio API which tries to make everyone happy. And that common audio API will be something like a Port Audio done right, or a libAO but very powerful, with a very powerful buffering model that somewhat is compatible with the buffering model Pulse Audio has. Effectively, we will encourage people to only use that abstraction API, and Pulse Audio will only use that API as the standard client API.
So what do you just want people to wait before they start writing applications? Should they write Pulse Audio API, or should they write this other API?
Right now it's like this. Because the current API is so difficult to use, most of the drivers for other software systems are written by us, by the two developers. And that's the way it should be stay for a while. So if anyone wants to ask, I want to write a new audio application, we could recommend either use one of the currently available APIs, which are supported by Pulse Audio, that is libAO for simple applications, or ELSA for more difficult applications. And eventually, we will tell people to use only that new defined API, which, by the way, will also give you cross-platform and whatever, and which will not only work on top of Pulse Audio, but it will be able to give you all the features Pulse Audio has. Okay?
I just would like him to turn back to the slide that gives me the website.
No, I can't do it tomorrow, of course. yeah, we hope to it will be done when it's ready. Or the other way around. It's going to be ready when it's done.
You've said you don't integrate other multimedia stack stuff, movie decoders and so forth into it. Without that, how do you arrange to get synchronization of sound with video for video playback? Because that's one of the biggest things on the desktop where you really notice latency mismatches.
We just offer a very good way to query the current playback position. Like all the other APIs do it as well. Like ALSA does it, like everyone does. Mm-hmm. So
does it work in practice?
Hmm?
Does it work?
Really well.
Of course it does. It works better than any other system. I mean, we have some difficulties, of course, because we are a network sound server, so we have to kind of reconstruct the current timing on the client side of the server side. So we do some kind of interpolation of the timing, and yeah, it could be better, but in local area networks should be work perfectly well. What you can do is you can run Amplayer on one machine and run Pulse Audio on another machine, and then you can have synchronous audio so that you can hear from one machine and look on the other machine. Everything works fine.
Excellent. Another question, if so, do you with your network transparency? Do you have something equivalent to the display variable? So if you've got Pulse Audio on both your client and your server machine, you just SSH over. Will it just work? Will you get sound locally despite running a program on a remote machine?
It does. That company, Sendio, actually has a sync client solution which runs on Linux and on Windows, and they tunnel all the audio through SSH.
Right, but does that happen? If I just have a desktop installed on these two machines and I SSH from one to the other, will it just work? Or do you have to say, I want to run my audio from there over here?
It should work. We have this nice feature that we can embed the information where the sound server is and the authentication cookie in the X11 root window. So everyone who has access to the application, right, which has access to the X11 root window, will be able to define the right way to the sound server, which, however, is not that useful if you use SSH, because it will, of course, not go through an SSH tunnel, but go directly on the network.
Yes, okay.
Just one more question down here. I feel like Jerry Springer.
On the management side, you didn't go very far into that. You said it acts like a quote-unquote window manager for audio apps. If, let's say, you write window managers and you'd like to extend the functionality Pulse Audio, example, add little volume bars to a drop-down on the title bar of every application that happens to play audio at that time, and, as you said, you know, change volume as focus changes or virtual desktops change, etc., what are the kind of APIs or mechanism to do that? How does that work?
You should be able to use the Pulse Audio API natively. We are currently extending the API a little bit to parse a lot of meta information with these streams, such as the icon of an application, so that we can show that in the volume manager, and the X IDs of the window and so on. This is all done to be able to write such a window manager for something. So yeah, the Pulse Audio API currently doesn't really export that functionality, but it will.
In the future.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. I'd like to join me in thanking Leonard for that talk. We have some small speaker gifts here for you to put some beer in and have a few drinks later on.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I'll do that.
Thank you, everyone.
But why is there no beer inside? I mean.